I hid. Hid from them all. Even Nina.
Her voice caught on her sister's name, and she paused to breathe, which seemed to be causing more difficulty. What she was saying was impossible. Two Dampirs couldn't make a Dampir. It went against the fundamental rules of the world. And yet, if she believed that... I suddenly remembered her panic upon meeting me, and then later, when she found out another alchemist was coming.
"That's why you ran," I said. "You were afraid of the alchemist."
She gave a weak nod and opened her eyes again.
"You know how they are. I don't know how this is possible, but they'd want to know. They'd take him. Please, Adrian, Sydney, don't let them, or the Moroi authorities. Keep him secret until he gets to Neil. Then Neil will hide him. Neil will keep him safe. But promise me."
Her eyes closed and her head tilted.
"Promise me you'll keep Declan safe."
"Stay with us," Adrian said urgently. My own vision was blurred with tears. "A little longer. Spirit's coming back to me, I know it."
Declan stirred in Adrian's arms and began to cry again. Olive's eyes opened a slit, and she smiled.
"So sweet,"
she said softly. Her eyelids fell closed again, and all the tension went out of her body as she slumped forward.
"There," Adrian gasped out. "I've got it. A spark of spirit. Enough to see auras."
I clutched his arm and felt tears running down my cheeks.
"Adrian."
"The baby's is so bright,"
Adrian said. There were tears on his face now, too.
"Like a star. But in her, there's nothing. No aura left to see."
Chapter 11. Adrian. We were still standing out in the woods, and I was still holding Declan. Amazingly, he'd gone to sleep, blissfully unaware of what a confusing and heartbreaking world he'd just been born into. Sydney leaned against me, and I put an arm around her as best I could while still keeping a firm grip on Declan. Rose and Dimitri stood nearby, watching with stricken faces as Olive was gravely taken away. "We need to act fast," I said, keeping my voice soft, "if we're going to honor her wishes." Sydney looked up at me and blinked back tears.
"You don't really think... that is, do you believe her? About Neil?"
I didn't answer right away. "I saw them at court. You did too. When this whole thing started, it was impossible for me to believe she'd been with another guy. Now I understand. And when I look at him, at Declan, well, it's hard to explain, but there's something special about him. His aura. It's like he's got this light dusting of spirit, kind of like what Sonia and I kept trying to create. He's got it naturally."
Sydney's breath caught. "If that's the case, a lot of people are going to be interested in him."
"They can't know about him," I said adamantly. "Olive was right about that, and I owe it to her to keep him secret. It's the least I can do since I failed her."
"Adrian,"
I wouldn't let Sydney finish. "We have to hide him. Will you help me?" Her face was filled with concern for me, but she didn't hesitate in her answer.
"You know you don't need to ask."
I kissed the top of her head. "We're going to need help." I beckoned Rose and Dimitri to come forward. They approached immediately. Rose swallowed, her dark eyes shining with tears.
"Adrian, I'm so sorry. There was nothing anyone could do."
"Well," remarked Aunt Tatiana, "you could have done something if you hadn't been so careless with spirit." "No time for that," I said briskly. "I need your help. What'll happen to Declan now? You know these kinds of places, Dimitri. What's the protocol when the mother dies? I need to know if we can take him."
"Who's Declan?"
asked Rose. I nodded down at the baby in my arms, still wrapped in someone's coat. Dimitri's face was hard to read. If she had family living here in this camp, he'd go to them. I'm sure we could also contact her family on the outside, whoever's left of them. There's a tradition... Yes? I prompted. He studied the baby uncertainly before continuing. There's an old tradition among Dampirs, especially those living in dangerous places and in uncertain conditions. Whomever the mother first gives the baby to becomes its guardian. Like I said, it's old, but I'm guessing that's why Olive was so insistent about seeing you, and why Lana hasn't tried to take him from you yet. I'm sure as soon as you tell her... No, I interrupted. That's perfect.
You want this baby? Asked Rose, making no attempt to hide how improbable she found the idea.
I want to get the baby out of here, I said. I want as few people to know about him as possible, or that I'm taking him. I thought back to who'd been around, Lana and the two warrior Dampirs. I wasn't sure if anyone else had been there when Olive had been found.
Can you talk to Lana? Tell her we're taking the baby to Olive's family, but that it's being kept quiet? And tell her not to mention my involvement to anyone. If we don't make a big deal about any of it, most of these people will assume we're taking him to his next of kin. But I'd prefer if he was as unmemorable as possible. I don't want anyone else seeing him or thinking too much more about him.
Rose and Dimitri exchanged understandably perplexed looks.
Adrian, what's going on?
Asked Dimitri. I shook my head. I can't tell you. Not yet. But believe me when I say this baby's life may depend on what we do now. Will you help us? That was a hard argument for them to go against, and it wasn't a lie either. Because as we walked back toward the heart of the commune, my power gradually began creeping back. And each time I tuned into Declan's aura, looking closely, almost at the cellular level, I could see that infusion of spirit. It's unlikely anyone would notice it unless they were really looking for it. And I understood with a shocking clarity why Olive had been afraid. Why she'd turned her back on everyone she knew and run off to a hole in the woods. What had happened, what I was holding in my arms, shouldn't exist. Two Dampirs couldn't make another Dampir. It went against one of the most basic rules of biology in our world. It was impossible. Yet, here it was. He was a miracle. But Olive had been right that there were people who'd want to study Declan, who'd want to possibly lock him up and experiment. And while I was ready to acknowledge that his birth was a wondrous, joyous thing, I wasn't ready to let his life be a series of experiments and finger-pointing, especially when his mother had died to protect him from that. Dimitri spoke to Lana privately, and either because of that Dampir tradition or his own reputation, maybe both, she acceded to all our requests. She gave us a vacant cabin to stay in until dawn. When we asked for supplies, she sent them via Rose or Dimitri, so that Declan would have as little exposure to others in the commune as possible. I needed him to be out of their minds. I needed them to forget him. Of course, that meant Sidney and I were in charge of his care that night. And in a few short hours, I learned more than I'd ever expected to about babies. She was able to look up some information on her phone, taking comfort in logic and facts. The signal out here was bad, though, and sometimes we found it was easier to take a guess on something than wait for an answer. Declan, fortunately, was a forgiving guy, and proved pretty accommodating as we figured things out together. He was patient as Sidney and I painstakingly read the instructions on the can of formula Lana sent. He made little complaint when I initially put his diaper on backward. When he grew tired again and started crying, I had no instructions to follow. Sidney gave a helpless shrug when I looked at her, so I just walked him around the living room, crooning classic rock songs until he dozed off and could be set down. Rose, who'd stayed with us off and on but looked more terrified of the baby than a Strigoi, watched me with amazement.
"You're kind of good at that," she remarked. "Adrian Ivashkov, baby whisperer."
I looked down at the sleeping baby. "I'm making it up as I go along."
"Are you ready to tell us what's going on?" she asked, her face growing grave. "You know we just want to help."
"Not yet. But if we can leave when Dimitri gets back, that'd be..." Sydney's phone chimed with a text message. She looked surprised that anyone would be reaching out to her until she took a look at the display.
"It's Ms. Terwilliger. She's mobilized the witches in Palm Springs. They're ready to start searching."
Rose stood up.
"For Jill?"
For Alicia, technically, but also for Jill, said Sydney. She says we can join them. She looked at me uncertainly, and I could guess her thoughts. We'd made this Michigan detour because we had time to pass while waiting for things to be ready for us in Palm Springs. Having a baby in tow hadn't been part of anyone's plan.
Sydney, Jill, now Declan, remarked Aunt Tatiana. So many people counting on you. So many people to let down if you fail.
I hope you're including me in that we, said Rose fiercely. I'm ready to bring Jill home.
Palm Springs, I murmured, still rocking Declan. That might be perfect. We can hide him away there.
We can't take a baby on a witch hunt, warned Sydney.
I nodded in agreement. Here, take him. He's asleep. Sydney carefully lifted Declan from my arms and looked at me quizzically as I reached for my phone. I had a bad signal, too, but it was good enough to get a call out to my mom.
Adrian? She answered in a panic. Where are you? I've been so worried ever since that Nina girl had a fit. Are you okay?
Yeah, well, no, it's complicated, but I need you to meet me in Palm Springs as soon as you can. I'm going there soon. Can you do that?
Yes, she began uncertainly. But
I can't tell you what's going on, I said swiftly. Not yet.
I know, darling, that wasn't what I was going to ask. I was wondering what I should do with the cat and the dragon while I'm gone.
Good question. Oh, see if Sonia will watch them. I disconnected and saw that Dimitri had stepped back inside.
We're going to Palm Springs?
He asked.
Time to look for Jill, said Rose.
If you're up for it, I added. Dimitri held up a car seat with one hand, which was almost comical.
We can go whenever you're ready. Lana gave us this and swears it's easy to install.
Rose laughed at that.
Oh, this I've got to see, comrade. Dimitri Belikov, badass god, installing a baby's car seat.
He smiled good-naturedly, and we scurried around, gathering up things. Sydney had to call Jackie back, and since my hands were full, she handed Declan off to Rose.
Just rock him, I said, seeing her panic.
Rose blanched but complied, earning laughter in return from Dimitri.
Rose Hathaway, notorious rebel, showing her maternal side.
She stuck her tongue out at him.
Enjoy it while you can, comrade. This is as close as you'll ever get to it.
I nearly dropped my bag as a startling thought occurred to me. Olive had said she and Neil had been together before he'd been injected with spirit. That meant whatever had happened to bring about Declan's conception had been the result of her being restored from being a Strigoi. Would that apply to Dimitri as well? Did that restoration only work on women? Rose and Dimitri were laughing now, joking because children were an impossible future for the two of them. But did they realize they might actually be capable of such a future? Did they want it?
You hold a lot of power over them, Aunt Tatiana whispered. Power to make or break their future happiness.
Adrian? Asked Rose, seeing my astonished face.
You okay?
Yeah, I said, slowly moving again. Just trying to get used to all this. When we finally made our way out, with Declan in my arms once more, it was impossible to entirely avoid notice as we walked through the rest of the community. People were out and about, trying to recover from the terrible aftermath of the Strigoi attack. Most were too caught up in their own affairs, but a few saw me and wanted to talk to me, because I'd healed them.
Thank you, thank you! Exclaimed
Mallory the guard, hurrying up and catching my arm.
They told me how bad I was. I might not have survived if it wasn't for what you did.
If I hadn't done it, would Olive still be alive? I wondered. But I smiled instead, and stammered out how glad I was that Mallory was doing well. When she called for a couple of her friends who'd also been injured to come over, I quickly handed Declan back to Sydney.
You two stay out of sight, I whispered.
A baby and an ex-alchemist were too memorable, and that was the last thing we needed right now. Sydney complied, hastily getting away from my fan club and me, with Dimitri shadowing her.
Meet at the car, he called back.
I nodded and then turned back to those I'd healed. I accepted their gratitude as graciously as I could, but all the while, I couldn't shake the idea that Olive should have been among them. A few mentioned her, expressing how sad they were at her loss, but no one asked about the baby. When they finally dissipated, I thought I was free, but then another voice called my name. I turned and saw Lana working toward me.
"Damn shame about what happened here," she said, her eyes filled with grief.
She seemed to have aged years in the day I'd known her.
"I wish it had been different."
"Me too," I said.
"Dimitri didn't tell me what's going on, but I'm respecting his wishes and yours. I don't know what all the secrecy's about, but I saw Olive's face when she was speaking to you, just before she passed."
Lana paused and ran a hand over her eyes.
"Something was eating her up. That much was obvious. And she trusted you with it. And the baby. That's good enough for me. I'm happy to help however you need."
"Do it by forgetting we were here," I said quietly. "Us and the baby."
"Fair enough," said Lana.
She cleared her throat.
"But I do have one uncomfortable question."
"Only one?"
asked Aunt Tatiana. "What would you like done with the body?" Lana asked.
I started. It wasn't anything I'd even thought about. Olive was gone. I'd literally seen the light of her aura go. That I'd be asked to deal with this hadn't even crossed my mind.
What would you normally do?"
Lana shrugged.
"We could have the body sent to her family for burial or cremation, or to a place in Houghton if you wanted it dealt with sooner. The alchemist left some of that chemical behind, the one that dissolves bodies. Said we could use it if we needed to."
My stomach lurched. The idea of Olive's body undergoing what a Strigoi's would was nauseating, especially after everything she'd gone through to redeem herself from that existence. And yet, I'd seen what that chemical could do. It would completely destroy what was left of Olive, destroy that she'd ever had a baby. I closed my eyes and felt the world sway around me.
"Adrian?" queried Lana. "You okay?"
I opened my eyes. "Use the chemical. It's what she would have wanted." Lana arched an eyebrow at that, but I couldn't elaborate. I couldn't tell her that Olive wouldn't have wanted to risk her body being sent to a funeral parlor or back to her family, where people would learn she'd given birth and ask questions. Olive had died to keep Declan a secret. This was another terrible part of that legacy.
"Okay," said Lana. "And I meant what I said. I'll keep this under wraps. My people will too. I'll make sure it stays quiet. This group knows how to keep a secret."
"Thank you. For everything." I started to turn, but she caught my arm.
"Oh, what should I tell your uncle? He was asking about you."
My uncle was no one I wanted to talk to, especially since I was sure he was someone who couldn't keep a secret. I didn't want him asking me about Olive or what would become of her son.
"Don't tell him anything," I said, "just that I left."
Another long day of travel followed, made even more complicated by having an infant around who required feeding every 2 hours. We couldn't get a flight out of Houghton, so Dimitri drove us to Minneapolis, with frequent stops along the way, until we could finally camp out at the airport there and catch a last-minute flight to LAX. Throughout all of this, Sydney and I split our attention between taking care of Declan and making contact with the people in Palm Springs. I verified that Neil had made it there, per our earlier arrangements, but I didn't tell him anything that was going on, not about Olive or Declan. And until I spoke to him, I also had to keep Rose and Dimitri in the dark, as much as I hated it. I just didn't feel they should know the truth before Neil did.
"Is this your first?"
"Huh?" Our plane was descending into Los Angeles, and I was doing my best to rock a fussing Declan while belted into my seat. In lieu of any proper baby toys, Sydney was trying to distract him by shaking a set of keys over him, even though she claimed to have read some article about how newborns couldn't actually see very far. The question had come from a little old lady sitting across the aisle from us. She nodded at Declan.
"Your first baby," she clarified.
Sydney and I exchanged glances, not entirely sure how to answer that.
Yeah, I said.
The old woman beamed.
"I thought so. You both are so attentive, so concerned. But don't worry. It's not as hard as you think. You'll get used to it. You two look like natural parents. I bet you'll have a dozen,"
she cackled to herself as the plane touched down. By the time we reached Palm Springs, Declan was the only one of us who wasn't wiped out. None of us had really had a decent night's sleep in days, but we kept on powering through as best as we could. Dimitri once again took it upon himself to drive and delivered us to Clarence Donahue's house, which provided a relatively safe haven and also a much-needed source of blood for me. Clarence Donahue was a reclusive old Moroi who'd helped us in the past, and he was delighted to see us when his housekeeper showed us into his living room. I was delighted to see my mother sitting there with him. "Mom," I said, wrapping her in a huge embrace. "My goodness," she said, when I was reluctant to let her go. "It's only been a few days, dear." "A lot's happened in that time," I told her honestly, thinking of how much life and death I'd witnessed in those days. "And I think a lot's going to go down when Sydney checks in with some of her friends. It's going to keep the rest of us pretty busy, and, there's something I need your help with." I stepped to the side and revealed Sydney, carrying Declan asleep in his car seat. My mom stared at the baby in confusion, then looked at Sydney, and then turned to me wide-eyed.
"Adrian," she exclaimed, "that's not... I mean, how is it possible?"
"He's not mine," I said wearily. "His name is Declan, and I'm taking care of him for a friend. I might need your help watching him while we go after Jill, though. There's no one else I can trust." As though he knew his name, Declan opened his eyes and regarded us solemnly. I honestly wasn't sure how my mother was going to respond to this request. Dompierre's had always been in subservient roles to her, and she'd freaked out when I'd brought Rose home on a date. After she'd accepted my marriage with Sydney, I'd once commented to her that she'd have to accept the idea of Dompierre grandchildren. My mom had shrugged off the topic, saying, yes, of course she understood that, but I'd wondered if she'd been pushing that off for another day's worries. How would she react now to caring for a Dompierre child? I carefully lifted Declan out of the seat and was astonished when my mother snatched him away.
"Look at you," she crooned, swaying him in her arms. "Such a handsome little boy. The handsomest little boy."
"I remember when you used to be her handsomest little boy," remarked Aunt Tatiana. My mom dragged her gaze from him.
"You should change him into some lighter clothes," she told me. "Those pajamas are too heavy for this climate."
"Those are all we have," I said. I pointed to a grocery bag Rose had set down. "Really, his worldly possessions are all in there."
"Where's he going to sleep?" my mother asked.
"He's just been using the car seat." She sighed loudly.
"Oh, Adrian, this is just like the time you brought home a neighbor's puppy and seemed surprised when you found out you'd have to feed it every day."
"Hey," I retorted, "we've fed this little guy plenty of times."
"Sydney, dear," my mother added, "I expected more sense from you, if not Adrian. Surely you know that a baby needs all sorts of things."
Sydney was momentarily stunned, and I couldn't blame her. I was pretty sure my mother had never called her dear before, and I think Sydney was at a loss as to whether to feel flattered by the endearment or chastised for her lack of sense.
"Yes, Mrs. Ivashkov," said Sydney at last. "That's why we wanted you out here while we got things settled. We know you'll get him all he needs."
"You're Mrs. Ivashkov now," corrected my mom.
"Call me Daniela."
That was another surprise to Sydney, and she was saved from her shock by her phone ringing.
"It's Ms. Terwilliger," she said,
answering it and walking out of the room. She returned a few minutes later, face excited.
"The local witches are going to start searching tomorrow at dawn," she told us once she disconnected. "I've got the location to meet. Eddie and Neil will join us. Until then, we'll just lay low."
She tripped a bit over Neil's name, her eyes falling on Declan as she spoke. I understood how she felt. At some point, once things were stable, Neil was going to have to find out he was a father. The concept still made me reel. You'd think after everything I'd come to terms with, Strigoi being restored, the dead brought back to life, that I could take two Dompierres creating a baby in stride. But I couldn't. It was still too strange, too beyond how I'd centered my world. My mother surprised me then by handing Declan back to me.
"If you two are stuck inside and nothing else is happening this evening, then I need to do some shopping before everything closes so that he can be properly taken care of."
I took a little offense at the words. I honestly thought we'd done a pretty decent job of taking care of him in the last 24 hours. Maybe he only had one outfit, but it was mostly clean, and I was putting his diapers on correctly now. Plus, he was always fed as soon as he showed any signs of hunger. For someone who'd spent most of his adult life fearful of getting girls pregnant, I thought my unexpected paternal trial was turning out reasonably well. But I knew what she meant, and part of the reason I'd wanted her to come was for her insight. After all, she'd raised a baby to adulthood, and I hadn't. "Not much left in my account," I told her. Both of us had been cut off by my dad. "But I'll give you my debit card, and you can use it as far as it'll go."
"Perhaps I may be of assistance," offered Clarence, getting to his feet.
With the help of his snake-headed cane, he hobbled over to an ornate wooden box on a shelf in the wall. I'd seen that box 100 times while I'd been in his home. What I hadn't seen was him ever open it, and my jaw nearly hit the floor when he lifted the lid and revealed stacks of $100 bills. He handed what had to be at least $1,000 to my mom.
"Will this be enough for the young master, Lady Ivashkov?"
My mother actually had the audacity to deliberate. "It's a start," she declared magnanimously. She turned to Rose and Dmitri. "Now, which one of you is going to drive me?" Surprisingly, Rose volunteered. Although still uneasy around Declan and babies in general, she seemed kind of excited about shopping for one. Sydney looked disappointed at not being able to join them, but made no arguments. With Alicia and the alchemists on the loose, Sydney couldn't leave a secure location like this without good reason. She contented herself by holing up in a guest room and prepping some spells that would be of use in the search for Alicia tomorrow. That left Dmitri and me to babysit, which seemed like the setup for some sort of wacky sitcom.
"They really are amazing, aren't they?" he mused, admiring Declan as he slept in my arms. "Someone so small, who will have such enormous potential. Good, evil, great acts, small acts. What will it be? What will he become?"
I wouldn't have known the answer for anyone, let alone for a child born because of the incredible magic used to restore his mother from an undead state. As Dmitri spoke, I was surprised to see a deep, heartfelt longing in his eyes. He and Rose might have teased each other about babies, yet, underneath it all, he seriously and desperately would love a child of his own, I realized. With a few words, I knew I could change his entire world if I told him the truth about Declan. That Dmitri might very well be able to have a son or daughter of his own. It might only have been the result of lucky timing that he and Rose hadn't conceived yet. That the possibility was out there was something they needed to know.
"He would be indebted to you," Aunt Tatiana murmured. "Since you've known him, you've always chased him, always been second to him, with Rose, with great deeds. But if you told him he could have a child with her, he would get down on his knees and weep at your feet."
The power was in my hands, and the temptation to tell him nearly overwhelming. But I bit my lip. I couldn't. Not until Neil knew. When my mom and Rose returned, I was astonished to see they'd become fast friends. I was also amazed at the quantity of merchandise they'd managed to buy in so short a time. A bassinet, a gazillion clothes, toys, and a whole bunch of products for babies I hadn't even known existed. Sydney looked it over with a critical eye and immediately began double-checking product reviews on her phone.
"This will get him by for now," my mother announced. "But of course he'll eventually need a full-size crib once he's bigger, and although that car seat is adequate for now, we saw several that would be much more suitable."
"We saw some with cup holders and sunshades," added Rose. Sydney nodded in agreement. "He'll definitely need a sunshade." I knew it was pointless telling them Declan wouldn't be in our care by the time he needed a cup holder. When it came to the strong-willed women in my life, I found it was sometimes easiest to nod and agree with whatever they dictated was best. That being said, Declan did seem much more comfortable sleeping in a real bed that night, and the rest of us stood around admiring him after he'd fallen asleep.
"Sweetest baby ever," my mother said with a sigh.
"You mean second sweetest, right?" I corrected. I was a little surprised at how quickly she'd taken to him, but then again, perhaps I shouldn't have been. Her whole life had been thrown into upheaval, between leaving my father and supporting my unorthodox marriage. Here, in Declan, she had a project that she could throw herself into, something far more meaningful and substantial than her cross-stitch, and less weird than a dragon or a witch's cat. More importantly for us that night, my mother was more than willing to take on the responsibility of Declan's overnight feedings. Part of this was because she was still on a nocturnal schedule from court, but she could also tell that the rest of us were exhausted, and being woken every couple of hours probably wasn't in our best interests if we wanted to be alert and ready for a possible encounter with Alicia tomorrow. After all, her whole point in that twisted scavenger hunt had been to wear Sydney down.
"I hope we find her," said Sydney, as she got into bed that night. "Can you even imagine? This could all be over by this time tomorrow. We find Alicia, we find Jill, everything goes back to normal. Well, whatever passes for normal with us."
I slid into bed, enjoying the luxury of stretching out after having pulled my last nap in a cramped airplane seat. It was also heady to have Sydney in relative privacy for a change. Clarence's home was so big that our guest room was isolated in this hallway, unlike the cramped quarters back in Court's guest housing. Sydney, dressed simply in shorts and a tank top, curled up against me, and I sighed happily. At last, a moment of peace with her.
"Adrian," she said, "we need to talk about what happened at the commune."
My hold on her stiffened.
"A lot happened." "I know, I know, and obviously we're dealing with the most important part, Declan. But we need to talk about what you did, that healing."
"She blames you," hissed Aunt Tatiana. "She blames you for Olive's death."
"You think I'm responsible for Olive dying?" I demanded.
"What?" said Sydney.
"No, no, of course not. Adrian, you don't blame yourself, do you? A Strigoi did that to her. There was nothing you could have done."
"Then why are you giving me a hard time about the healing?" I asked. She exhaled.
"I'm worried about the way it wore you out. You said you'd toned down your spirit use, that it was for the best."
"Actually," I said, "I don't know that I ever said that. I think you decided it and have been forcing it on me." Her kind tone suddenly became a lot frostier.
"Forcing it? Adrian, I'm trying to help you. You heard what happened to Nina with all that spirit use. I don't want you comatose like her."
"I didn't use as much as her," I retorted.
"You drained yourself. That seems like a lot to me."
"Yeah, well," I said angrily, "there are a bunch of Dompiers back in Lana's camp who disagree with you. They're grateful for what I did."
"But not Olive," whispered Aunt Tatiana. "She has nothing to say at all."
"Adrian," said Sydney, obviously trying for calm.
"I'm sure they are grateful, but we've been over this. You need to go back on your medication. You can't save everybody. You can't use spirit indiscriminately and ignore the cost to yourself. You're putting your life in danger."
"What kind of life would I have? What kind of person would I be if I hoarded that magic and let others suffer?"
"I can't, Sydney. If I see someone and I can't help, I'm going to. I can't sit by and abandon them."
"And I can't sit by and let you keep hurting yourself," she cried, losing that calm again.
"I'm sorry," I mumbled, rolling over to my side. "I guess I can't change who I am."
Long moments passed, and finally she rolled onto her side too, so that our backs faced one another. Icy silence fell. So much for a peaceful or romantic night.
"She doesn't understand," Aunt Tatiana told me. "She never will."
"I need her to," I answered back in my head. "I need her in my life to understand and support me. Without her, I'm lost."
"You'll always have me," came the phantom response.
I tugged the covers more tightly over me, thinking with dread about how one of these days I was going to have to deal with the elephant in the room, or rather, the dead queen in my head. I was fairly certain that if I went back on my medication, Aunt Tatiana would go away, but then so would Spirit. Was I ready for that again? Without Spirit, I never would have been able to heal those Dompiers. I wouldn't be able to help in the upcoming rescue for Jill. Without Spirit, what was I?
"Spirit couldn't save Olive," remarked Aunt Tatiana. "It's overrated."
"Shut up," I mumbled. Behind me, Sydney stirred.
"Did you say something?"
I rolled back over and kissed her shoulder. "I said I'm sorry. I love you."
Chapter 12. Sydney. I went to bed feeling unsettled. Adrian had swung back too quickly from his opposing stance for me to believe he'd truly had a change of heart. When morning came, though, there was little opportunity for further discussion. Declan demanded our attention, and then before long, it was time for us to go and help the others search for Alicia. Before joining the witches, however, Adrian and I first had a much-needed reunion with some of our friends. We went to Adrian's old apartment with Rose and Dimitri, triggering another wave of nostalgia as I thought back to all the time I'd spent there. Long afternoons, lounging around in Adrian's arms. Before we were married, before we were constantly pursued, I thought we were living on the edge back then. But compared to what we faced these days, life had been deceptively simple. Trey Juarez greeted us at the door, his easy grin growing even bigger as he took in Adrian and me.
"Been a long time, Melbourne. Or do I call you Ivashkov now?"
I returned his powerful embrace. When Adrian had left Palm Springs to live at court, he'd given his apartment to Trey.
"I'm still just trying to get you to call me Sydney," I told him.
I introduced Rose and Dimitri to him and then glanced around the apartment. Still the sunny yellow shade that Adrian had painted it. Eddie and Neil were there waiting for us, and I gave them hugs too.
"Where's Angeline?"
"At Amberwood. She's got summer classes."
"Does she?"
I asked in surprise.
"I didn't know that. I thought she was just boarding there for the summer."
"She was,"
Trey agreed, a sparkle in his eyes.
"And then I convinced her some extra studying would help her with classes in the fall."
"The fall?"
I settled down on the couch, trying not to think of the times Adrian and I had curled up together on it.
"I figured she'd go back to the Keepers."
"You should know her better than that," said Neil wryly. "The Queen agreed to fund her education as a way of thanking her for looking after Jill all this time."
I almost didn't process his words. The sight of Neil reminded me of Declan, waiting back at Clarence's. Adrian and I had agreed it was best to wait to tell Neil the news, but it was a huge secret to be carrying.
"Angeline almost refused," added Trey. "Said she didn't deserve it since she'd let Jill slip away. But I convinced her Jill will want a well-educated guardian when we rescue her. And that Amberwood's not that far of a drive from UCLA."
I smiled, despite a pang of jealousy. Trey was going to college soon, something I'd been denied initially because I was part of the Alchemists. Now being constantly on the run from them, it seemed unlikely I'd go anytime soon.
"Look at you, setting a good example for others," I teased.
"Hey," he said. "I meant all of it. And we are going to get Jill back, right? Explain this lead you've got. Eddie said it's some girl you fought before."
The light mood instantly shifted as we got down to business. "Her name's Alicia DeGraw," I explained, getting out my phone. "We don't entirely know where or how she's holding Jill, but it seems pretty clear now she's doing it as a way to get back at me. Her last clue led to the Salton Sea, and that's where Ms. Terwilliger's friends are going to help us search today." I showed him Alicia's picture, which Ms. Terwilliger had obtained from a friend of hers who'd known Alicia back when she was Veronica's apprentice. It had been taken a couple of years before I met Alicia, but she looked the same. Hipster glasses, excessive accessories, and bobbed pale blonde hair. Trey's eyes widened.
"I know this girl."
Seeing our astonished looks, he hastily amended,
"That is, I've seen her. She came here looking for you and Adrian. I told you guys, but I never caught her name."
Vaguely, I recalled Trey mentioning a girl who'd come by asking for Adrian and me during the time I'd been held captive by the Alchemists. We'd been so preoccupied by other things, like escaping with our lives from the Alchemists, that the incident had slipped our minds.
"She was here?"
exclaimed Eddie.
"Only long enough to ask for Sydney and Adrian," Trey said, "and use the bathroom."
realization hit me. And I bet I left a comb or brush in there. That's how she got my hair to key that spell to me. Many of our friends only knew bits and pieces of the story and the chase Alicia had led us on, so I took a moment to catch everyone up and give a full rundown. Eddie was glowering by the time I finished.
It's been driving me crazy being in town, knowing I might be so close to Alicia and not able to do anything, he said. But Miss Terwilliger insisted we search with the other witches.
You could have shaved in your downtime, suggested Adrian helpfully.
I understand, I told Eddie, ignoring Adrian's snark. I haven't liked the delay either, but getting them to help us will give us an extra layer of protection against Alicia. There's no telling what magical traps she might have laid.
Are you sure she wants you to come to the Salton Sea?
Asked Dimitri.
You think that clue was meant to be taken literally?
All her other clues were very specific, I said. So, yes, I think that was her initial plan. However, we've delayed a few days by keeping me away. That may have undone whatever she originally wanted, which is good and bad. It means she's been thrown off, but it also means she may just come up with something new that we aren't expecting. Our hope is that we can find some clue at Salton today that might put us on the right track. I don't even know her, and I hate her already, remarked Rose. I glanced at the time. Let's hope we can find her so you can tell her in person. It's time to go. Our group mobilized and set out in two different cars, off to meet Ms. Terwilliger and the other witches at a Salton Sea State Park. The sky was overcast with gray clouds, hinting of a rare rainy summer day ahead. When I saw the group that Ms. Terwilliger had assembled, I was awestruck. At least 2 dozen witches stood before us.
I feel bad, I murmured to Ms. Terwilliger, stepping away from the others. Getting all these people involved?
She pushed her glasses up and smiled at me.
It's like I told you in the Ozarks. This is a problem for the entire magical community. You have nothing to feel bad about. It's Alicia's fault, not yours.
I sighed. I just hope waiting to come here was the right course of action.
While you were magically exhausted, just like she wanted you to be? No, Sydney. All you would have been doing is giving yourself to her. Even if we don't find her today, at least you've had a chance to rest and prepare for what's next.
I simply nodded, certainly not about to tell her that my last few days with Adrian had been anything but restful. Maybe I was no longer magically exhausted, but I was certainly mentally drained. Hopefully that wouldn't hurt in the hunt for Alicia. Coven members I'd met at my initiation had all turned out, dropping whatever it was they'd had planned today in order to track down Alicia. Maud, Trina, Allison, and others whose names had slipped my mind in the last several months. Equally astonishing was that members of other covens had also come to join us. Verifying Ms. Terwilliger's insistence that this was indeed a problem for the entire magical community.
We're certainly not going to leave a mess like this for a newcomer like you to deal with alone,
snapped Inez Garcia, coming up to me as I started to turn from Ms. Terwilliger. Inez was perhaps the most surprising addition of all today. She was a venerable old witch, notable both for her powers and her refusal to join any coven. She was the witch Ms. Terwilliger had gone to about the wooden box. Her acerbic wit was also legendary, though she'd taken a mild liking to me, which was about as much as she liked anyone. Catching sight of Rose and Dimitri chatting near Trey, Inez gave a small snort of amusement.
No surprise you've got Dom Piers with you. What happened to that Maroi boy you had in tow last time? The one with the nice cheekbones?
Oh, he's over there, I said, flushing slightly. I married him. Inez's pointed eyebrows rose.
Did you now? Well, good for you.
Maud, one of the senior witches in the stele, called everyone to attention. We gathered in a big circle as she cast a spell that created a miniature map of the Salton Sea on the ground in front of us. The plan was simple for now, mostly because we didn't know for sure what to expect. Between Ms. Terwilliger's magical recruits and the muscle I'd provided with Trey and the Dompiers, we had nearly 30 people. We were going to divide into smaller groups to investigate as much of the shoreline as possible. Some parts were easier to get to than others, so today's goal was checking out the public areas. Theoretically, Alicia would have had the same limitations. The groups were divided up based on those who had strong affinities to detect magic in general, and those who were good at casting spells to detect hidden enchantments. The Dompiers were distributed among the groups, just in case physical force was needed. Ms. Terwilliger wanted Adrian and me to stay with her, and Eddie insisted on remaining with us as well. Although Jill was his main priority, he still felt responsible for us. It looked as though Ms. Terwilliger's predictions were spot on, that Alicia might very well have abandoned her plan when I didn't immediately take the bait. If she had left a magical trap around, she'd also done a great job of eradicating all trace of it. Our search party scoured all the public areas we could, checking some of them twice without finding anything. Undaunted, we took a small break for lunch and then reconvened to explore the less accessible regions around the lake. Even getting into those areas required magic, mostly invisibility spells, and that took a fair bit of coordination. As evening rolled around, however, those clandestine searches proved as fruitless as the easier ones. No sign of Alicia or magical traps. Maud and Ms. Terwilliger thanked the other covens for their help and sent them home for the night.
Maud and I are going to run a few errands to gather some spell components that might be useful, Ms. Terwilliger told me. I'd like to lay some protective spells around where you're staying, just to be safe, unless you and Adrian would like to stay at my place.
I smiled at that, thinking of Declan.
Things are a little complicated right now. I'd better stick to Clarence's.
Fair enough, she said, especially with those Dompiers of yours around. I like you having that extra protection, just in case Alicia attempts something we don't expect. In fact, well, I have another suggestion to help you out. I'd like you to stop by Malachi's home on your way back. You remember how to get there, of course.
Malachi Wolf? I asked as if she could be referring to any other Malachi. She nodded.
I've already spoken to him. He'll lend you a weapon, just in case. I trust your magic, but would feel better with something extra guarding your back.
I didn't like the idea of a gun, but Ms. Terwilliger had a point. When it came to Alicia, we couldn't take any chances. I glanced back at my gathered friends.
No need for all of us to go, especially since one of us should get home and check on your mom, Adrian.
I could tell from his expression that he understood my meaning perfectly, that it was actually Declan we needed to check up on.
Well, as much as I'd love to see Wolf, it's probably better you go to him, in case he demands another skill test before letting you borrow a weapon, said Adrian. I'll get back home to Mom. You guys...
He glanced at the Dompiers.
I'll go with Sydney, said Eddie. I want to finally meet this guy.
He'd taken our lack of results today hard, so I was surprised to see him enthused about anything. Of course, Malachi Wolf had become legendary among my friends, most of whom had never met him, and were only going off of the stories Adrian and I had told about our time in the Wolf School of Defense. In fact, it was clear from Trey and Neil's faces that they wanted to come with Eddie and me. But Trey needed to pick up Angeline and had come out to the Salton Sea in Neil's rental car. The two of them decided to get that straightened out while Rose and Dimitri went with Adrian. That left Eddie and me, and after telling our friends goodbye, we set out for Malachi's compound on the outskirts of Palm Springs.
Are the Chihuahuas really trained to attack?
He asked. I couldn't help but grin.
That's what Wolf claims. We've never seen them in action, though.
I can't wait to see his nunchucks.
Do not touch them, I warned, or any weapon, without permission. If he approves of you, he might lend you something, too. Some of Eddie's humor faded.
I really hate that it's come to you needing to borrow a weapon. I hate that it's come to any of this.
He sighed in dismay.
I know Ms. Terwilliger warned us Alicia might have moved on, but I was really, really hoping we'd find some sign of her today.
I know, I said in dismay. I wanted that too, but if she had to scramble and change her plans, the odds are good she got careless. We just need to take advantage of that and beat her before her next move.
And each day we wait is another day of God knows what for Jill.
The despair in his voice made my heart ache. I know, I told him sadly. I know. Malachi's compound was a series of stark, industrial-looking buildings on a large, grassless lot well off the highway. We pulled into the long gravel driveway, and I saw some of Eddie's earlier enthusiasm return as every fantasy about Malachi's bizarre lifestyle slowly unfolded. The sun was just touching the horizon, making everything even creepier as shadows fell. I smiled to myself, remembering the first time Adrian and I had visited, unsure if we were walking into a self-defense class or an abduction. I knocked at the door of the main house and wasn't surprised to hear the frantic pitter-pattering of little chihuahua feet, followed by a cacophony of frenzied yelping.
Oh, man,
breathed Eddie.
There really is a herd of them.
I'd seen Eddie fearlessly face down an attacking Strigoi, but he took an uneasy step back at the sound of the canine charge. I grinned and turned toward the door, waiting for Malachi Wolf himself to answer. Slightly unstable and very unorthodox, Wolf had nonetheless been a good friend to Adrian and me, and more than a friend to Ms. Terwilliger. That last part still made me squirm a bit, but after everything Adrian and I had endured, I was more convinced than ever that everyone needed someone to love, even scattered sorceresses and eye-patch-wearing self-defense instructors. When no answer immediately came, I knocked again. This drove the dogs into a louder frenzy, but Wolf still didn't materialize. Weird, I said.
Didn't you text him before we left?
Asked Eddie. Ms. Terwilliger did, I replied. I glanced over at the other buildings, looking for movement. He said he had some weapons in mind for me. Maybe he's getting them out. I stepped back to the ground and headed toward where I knew Wolf kept a stockpile of weapons. I hope he's not going to try to pass off that blowgun again. Eddie's face lit up as he followed me across the sandy ground.
Blowgun? Are you seriously?
His words were lost as a mailbox suddenly exploded beside us. Without missing a beat, Eddie pushed me down and rolled us away from the worst of the heat and flames. Gravel and hard ground scraped at my skin, but it was certainly better than the alternative. Eddie kept himself positioned protectively over me as we both carefully lifted our heads and peered around, taking in the fiery wreckage.
What the hell?
He asked. Another explosion erupted from the ground beside us. No flames this time, but the rocks that flew up from it were as good as shrapnel, and I cried out as a particularly sharp one bit into my arm. I pointed at the closest building. There! Before he could stop me, I ran toward it, casting a spell of unseen force that shattered a window. An ear-piercing alarm blared out. No surprise Wolf would have this place wired. The question was whether his paranoia would extend to having that alarm system monitored by the police or not. Eddie followed me through the window, and I found we were in the building that had served as a training area for my self-defense class. It was wide and open, lined with mirrors and cases of weapons. I sized up the room, looking for the safest position. Eddie, meanwhile, ran straight for one of the cases. After waffling between a bola and some brass knuckles, he went with the bola, swinging it around with practiced ease as he warily backed up and kept an eye on the window we'd broken. I called up my favorite spell,
summoning a fireball to my palm.
"Is it Alicia?"
Eddie yelled, making his voice heard over the alarm.
"I guess so,"
I called back. I'd sensed a human magic in those explosions, and unless there was yet another witch after me, Alicia seemed like the logical choice. With my non-fireball hand, I managed to text the most recent contact in my phone, Ms. Terwilliger. I could only manage a short message and hoped it would convey the severity of the situation. Help. I should have known Alicia wouldn't settle for the opening we'd made into the building. The main door suddenly exploded in a shower of sparks and wood. A silhouette appeared in the doorway, and without verifying its identity, I hurled my fireball. The figure held up a hand, and the fireball smashed harmlessly against an invisible barrier. When it cleared, the figure moved forward, and I finally came face to face with Alicia. She gave me a cold smile.
"Hello, Sydney. Nice to see you again. Surprised to see me alive?"
I called another fireball to my hand.
"It was never my intent to kill you."
Even I realized how lame that sounded, considering all I'd done to her, and she gave a harsh laugh.
"Really? What exactly was the point of stabbing me and leaving me in a burning house?"
Before I could respond, Eddie charged her, swinging his bola in the air. With a flick of the wrist, she made a wall of mirrors beside him shatter. I saw it coming, but wasn't quite fast enough in dismissing my fireball in favor of a shield for him. I deflected part of the damage, but some of the glass embedded itself in him, particularly his bare arm. I saw a brief flash of pain pass over his features, but he didn't stop moving. Alicia shattered another mirror, and this time I had an invisible shield squarely in place to protect him. He released the bola, but despite its perfect aim and fast speed, she anticipated it and blew it away with a wave of invisible force.
"Where's Jill?"
I yelled at her. A cruel smile twisted over Alicia's features.
"You'd love to know that, wouldn't you?"
Eddie picked up a piece of broken glass and came running toward her, wielding it like a knife.
"I swear, if you've hurt her...
Oh, honestly, as if I'd waste my time hurting her."
Alicia took out a pinch of powder from her pocket, throwing it at Eddie and shouting an incantation I didn't know. I wasn't able to intercept this one in time, and the magic seized Eddie. Like that, he froze in place, mid-stride and holding the glass shard menacingly in his hand.
"What have you done to him?"
I cried.
"Relax, Sydney," Alicia said. "He's still alive, just like your little Maroi friend. For now."
"Take me to her,"
I demanded. Alicia laughed.
"Sorry, Sydney. You'll never see her again. She's going to have to suffer through a few more psalms, and you're just going to suffer."
The floor under my feet rippled. I staggered and fell to my knees, but was able to throw a fireball at Alicia before I completely lost my balance. My aim was spot on, but she lifted her hands to cast what I suspected was another shielding spell. The incantation she spoke was Greek, one I hadn't heard before either. The fireball hit another unseen wall, but rather than shatter, the flames rebounded and came back toward me in exactly the same path. I yelped and managed to get out of its way just in time. I was spared, but the fireball hit a cabinet instead, engulfing it in flames. The fire spread quickly, making me wonder what kind of varnish Wolf used. At the same time, the alarm finally stopped blaring.
"Mirroring spell," Alicia said gleefully. "Very useful. Be careful what you cast."
She meant it as a taunt, but there was truth in it that made me hesitate before I planned my next course of action. It was too long a delay, as she soon cast what I recognized as the same spell that had frozen Eddie. That one was too complex for me to fully follow, but it gave me the opportunity to dodge and block it. I then opted for a different kind of freezing, a literal one, as I sent a wave of ice her way. It wasn't nearly as lethal as a fireball, but it also wouldn't add to the already spreading fire. Alicia responded with the mirror spell, sending the ice back my way. I ducked, and the ice landed in part of the burning room beside me. Rather than diminish the fire, however, it simply made the smoke grow thicker.
"He must be getting tired," she teased. She was